We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. This is Cheryl from Dja-Dja-Wurrung country.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 183 of the Beyond 90 podcast. It's the usual Fab Four here, myself, Eric Subihano, Emma Burke, Magella Card, and Dale Roots. My goodness, we've got lots to talk about this week, and we've loved watching everything that we saw in the dub over the past week. So, firstly, before we get onto that, time to check in on my co-host. So, going from left to right on my screen, Emma, been a good week for your teams.
Yes. Yeah, not bad at all. Can't complain. I do wish most all teams had have kept a clean sheet, but you can't have it all, so.
You definitely can't, and we may get on to your gripes with non-clean sheet keeping later on. Next up, Madge. I was going to complain about the Heat, but then I saw some of your tweets, and I will now defer to you in the Heat complaining stakes.
Yeah, I may have to have a drinks break partway through the pod. It got up to that lovely feels like, which is the real temperature, 48 degrees today was the highest I saw it. It's just been a bit stupid today. I'm actually surprised my internet is still working. I'm surprised I still have power, actually. I've just done the air conditioning like on and off, like trying not to like completely brown out the suburb. But anyway, I'm still here.
Yes. Thank goodness for that. Please don't melt into nothingness, but feels like 48. Oh, God.
Mm.
And also, big weekend for you, Dale. Just as you described it in the pre-pod chat, the small matter of your wedding.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you all. So someone's finally made an honest man out of me, which is, she's a woman of great patience, if not great wisdom. But yeah, got married on the weekend. It was lovely. Had our official ceremony on the Thursday, and then we had our like big bash on the Friday night. Shout out to Gunners Barracks at Mossman and to everybody that made it. Unfortunately, Eric wasn't able to make it as he was under the weather. But friend of the pod, Lockie France, did devour his pork belly and lamb as requested. But yeah, it was a great night. It was a good night. I only got dropped off somebody's shoulders once. But yeah, I'm a little bit sore after that, unfortunately. But yeah, not as sore as I was on Saturday morning, I'll tell you that much.
Great. That's the main thing. And in case you're wondering why Dale is here and not elsewhere with his lovely partner, Julia, I can attest to Julia's patience, by the way. Your honeymoon is not for quite a while, so.
Yeah, we've got a wedding in France in July, so we're kind of we're tucking that all in together, and we'll make that part of our trip, our big honeymoon. And I am also broke. That is the downside of having a large party for almost 100 people, is that you have to pay for their food.
Yes.
And
the food looked amazing, by the way.
The food was great. The food was great. The whole night was lovely, but it's not a cheap exercise, unfortunately.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, we'll be off and away over during NWSL season. So hopefully I might catch some of that while I'm over there.
Fantastic. And yes, I am under the weather because I have COVID. And very luckily, I did not attend Dale's wedding, not Dale's ceremony on Friday night, but that's several bullets dodged. But I mean, I am, of course, here to host the podcast for you as always, because one, I love it. And two, I mean, COVID changed the way the world operates. But as anyone who's familiar with my commentary will know, it takes more than that virus to stop me from talking. Anyway,
yeah.
onto this week's featured Matilda, Cap 183, Katrina Lee Gorry. Familiar to most of you, I'm sure. Matilda's debut back in 2012 and still going strong, currently with West Ham, of course. Shout out to her grassroots club, Mount Gravatt Hawks.
Gravatt. 100. Sorry.
What?
What? Gravatt. Sorry, I can't let that pass.
Yeah, this is Mount Gravatt Hawks. I'm sorry. This is not the first time Matt has had to correct me.
I shouldn't be correcting anyone on pronunciation, but yeah. Anyway.
Mount Gravatt Hawks.
When I will.
Yes, thank you, Madge. 100 fight appearances for the senior national team, 17 goals, and I'm assuming her goals for the Matildas, all killer, no filler. If you're familiar with Katrina Gorey's body of work, of course, and Gorey well known for being a midfielder. Now, we'll go into the more serious stuff in terms of her career and what she's brought to all the teams she's played for, but just because it's Katrina Gorey, I've embedded one of my favorite tweets in the pod notes, which is Katrina Gorey playing for Brisbane away at McKellar Park, and Brisbane protecting a 2-1 lead, and Katrina Gorey duck walking, and then the camera cutting to an extremely frustrated Heather Garriock. And it's she does have that in the locker, tremendous skill, but also like she knows how to behave.
Tremendous shithousery.
Like
she does that. I mean, and like this was one of many, because remember, penalty against Ireland, she ran over. Was it against Ireland?
She was
ran
sitting
over
on the spot.
Is that Canada? I mean, she might have done it for both, but Canada.
Oh, no, it was the Ireland game, sorry. No, yeah. No, it was a Canada game. Canada.
Yeah, and she pushed the player off the centre circle so nobody could scuff the penalty spot up.
And then just sat down like a petulant child.
Like a petulant child.
But what I love most about her shithousery is that she doesn't ham it up.
No.
She's a complete robot sort of face. Like, I will, if you try and push me about this, I will kill you.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing in the world.
I seem to remember, like, I remember her getting in a blue with Lena Karmas, of all people, at Marconi. And yeah, it was just two of the angriest people that you would ever see, but neither of them showing like any facial expressions of anger. absolute granite-faced stare-downs. She's definitely a character. She's definitely given us a lot of great moments on the socials.
I mean, I suppose at some point we should talk about the actual football for Katrina.
We can do that.
Yes, Emma, please bring this back above board, because even as much fun as this discussion has been.
Katrina Gorey's footballing, I mean, when I think of it, I just think of those massive goals. Mm. Like, how does she fit so much power into her tiny little legs?
Mm.
Anytime I see her with the ball outside near the top of the box, I'm like, oh, we're in Gorey areas. Mm. We're in Gorey areas. Mm. She could do it. I've seen it. She's done it before. She'll do it again. But my personal favorite memory of Katrina Gorey is when she scored a header against Japan.
Yes!
Because none of that makes any sense. And I think about it all the time. It's like, Japan!
And from memory, that was very important header as well. That was like my God, that was the goal we needed, and it came off that head.
Yeah. How are they going to let her do that? How?
It's funny though, because like with as you say, like with the Gorey, with the zone, with the Gorey zone, like she doesn't take direct free kicks from memory.
No, not really, no.
Which is to me kind of strange, because like as you say, she has an absolute cannon of a peg, and like why wouldn't I guess she's just the kind of player that she has to have the ball rolling to get properly.
She did a little bit for Brisbane. I remember I think last season her popping one over the wall into the goal. But, yeah, maybe it's one of those things where, yeah, there's other free kick takers in like the Matilda squad, and she's good to have ferreting around if it just decides to pop out.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And I feel like she, from memory, it's often her and Ellie Carpenter at the back, like if the ball pops out to stop a counter, because neither of them are, I mean, particularly vertically gifted. Hmm. So it kind of makes
sense. Except for that one time against Japan.
Exactly.
And speaking of stopping attacks, Katrina Gorey knows how to do that. The slide tackling, the other thing, possibly the only thing more violent than her shooting.
Yeah, look, what I, apart from the attacking stuff, which we love, and the vision and the sort of those through balls that we know she's capable of, what I always have loved about her is her, yeah, just defensive steel in midfield. And I feel like, you know, when the Matildas haven't had her there, that sometimes you miss that. In the past, we've missed that person who just gets stuck in and gives us a chance to win the battle in midfield. She's just that type of player. Even if she's not on 100% in attack, she's always going to give 110% in sort of defence. And like I say, yeah, those slide tackles, she's not going to let an opposition midfield get away too easily. They'll always have a real hard time when she's in midfield.
Yeah, I was just reminded of another podcast I listened to that has a theory on elite athletes that are, shall we say, shorter than average. And I think thinking about all the things they've had to overcome to get to where they are and all the underestimating that must have happened. And Katrina Gorry does live up to that. There's no bullying Katrina Gorry. No.
Yeah. Also, and because she's lower to the ground, obviously she's got a lower center of gravity, which means that she's going to be harder to push off the ball.
I like that too, incredible technique. I mean, I think years ago, I remember her stories of her playing five-a-side in Brisbane and rinsing everyone, rinsing basically the entire city of Brisbane. So, there's all that. She's won an AFC Player of the Year. So, yeah, and she once scored a goal while pregnant as well. So
true. She did that.
Yes, she did. That is true.
We definitely
missed her when she was away for the Matildas. She is a player that is very difficult to replace she was, in my opinion, one of the best midfielders at the last World Cup. She runs that midfield like, you know, it's a well-oiled machine. And I think with her and Kyra Cooney Cross now, we've really got a really solid kind of double pivot. So yeah, for a few more years to come, hopefully she can teach Kyra a few more things, and then she can, you know, go off into the sunset and leave us in good hands.
And I think, as I alluded to on a recent podcast, making sure her child plays for Australia and not any other country. That's very important to us. I've now just thought of Katrina Gorry teaching Kyra Cooney Cross how to slide tackle like her, which would make KCC an even more exciting player to watch. Yes. So, onto that. I mean, there's no point, but let's not wait anymore for this. It's been a typical dub week, shall we say. And speaking of going back in the Wayback Machine for tweets, I just remembered a tweet that I think encapsulates A-League Women and why we love it so much. A tweet from 5 years ago. W League is so wild. You have experienced internationals, US national team fringe players, high schoolers, and elementary school teachers all on the field at the same time fighting for a championship. I think replace US national team fringe players with just young aspiring Americans, and it's pretty much the same thing these days. But yeah, shout out to John D. Halloran for being a foreign observer and yet encapsulating our league so well.
An evergreen tweet.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like there is any way that is ever going to change.
Yeah.
This week was just the silliest week of football.
So starting with a midweek dub at Leichhardt Oval, a Sydney FC 1, a Central Coast Mariners 2, Ashley Irwin doing about 20 minutes in goals and helping the Mariners to a big away victory that keeps them high up in the table. Where do we start with this one? I don't know. I mean,
it was potentially the silliest game to start us off with. We got real silly real early. I don't know.
I wouldn't go so far as to say this was the game of the season, but it was definitely the silliest game of the season so far.
Yeah. It started with a pinball own goal to put the Mariners in front. Mm-hmm. And yeah, then just in case you missed it, Central Coast Mariners did a halftime keeper swap after being concerned about Casey Dumont's health.
Yeah, so, potential concussion?
Yeah, possibly. And then, Sarah Willacy on, very capable person to bring on, except for the fact that she got sent off fouling Abby Lemon.
Yeah.
And that had me screaming for all kinds of things from the grandstand at Leichhardt Oval.
Yeah, it wasn't, that tackle wasn't the problem. It was the time-wasting yellow card previous to that, which was completely unnecessary. But, I mean, hindsight is 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the madness begun. And yes, we'll give another shout out to friend of the pod, Lockie France, because we all knew exactly what was going to happen once Willacy had been sent off, because we had witnessed basically her doing the exact same thing for Sydney University a couple of years ago. And of course, Emily Husband was the coach back then, so at least those two knew what was going to happen. The theater of it was brilliant. She had to go into the dressing rooms to get changed. So she comes onto the field like some kind of hero, like some kind of superhero to save the day. Mm. And by the way, it was raining, so she has to deal with a wet ball as well. And yeah, just, I think good to see that they actually had someone who wasn't a complete novice in goal. But where do we begin? Like the messy opener for the Mariners, the messy equalizer, where Mackenzie Hawksby in the wet against an inexperienced goalkeeper, being very smart and just getting it on target.
You just got to put it on target. Yeah, you just got to put it on target. And I think, like, in all honesty, Irwin did really, like, obviously she kind of grabbed the ball at second chance, but, like, her first save was decent enough. She just kind of panicked when the ball didn't go over or go away from the goal as she kind of would have hoped. But, like, you couldn't fault her for whatever else she was doing on the pitch. Like, she was, you know, she was talking a lot. She had a few goal kicks. Like, you know, her distribution was fine. She just obviously conceded that goal. But, I mean, even if she had a... In all honesty, I know from memory, I'm not sure whether it went down as an own goal, but it probably will. But like, even if she had have spilled it, it was still getting tapped in. Like, it was just unlucky that it didn't go over the net at the first try. Mm. But like that, as you say, it's so good that they have a third option for a goalkeeper. Like, I wouldn't know
fourth
who...
option because of Chloe Carmichael.
Four options for a goalkeeper, and I know that. You don't want to kind of be testing the waters too often, but like, at least they've got that backup there. Moving forward, they know that they've got that option.
I think Mariners were exactly what you want with an outfielder in goal. Just block a wall of yellow between Ash and the Sydney FC players. And then, yeah, the final bit was just, it was kind of a converted penalty was too neat for a game like that to finish. So obviously it had to be saved first, and then Urugamal tucks in the rebound. And I did enjoy the post-game salt from Sydney FC fans after the big Mariners celebrations. I think it's just like, come on, please. They won with an outfielder and goal. Of course it's going to be the biggest celebration of the year.
And also, like, the penalty that they won was, like, unfortunately a Stonewall penalty.
Yeah, it's
like, I mean, it's you say, oh, you know, it's hard to, you know, oh, they shouldn't be given a penalty. It hit a leg, like, it was a Stonewall penalty. And they were lucky that Wyman made the save to even give them the opportunity of following it up. But yeah, there's no need for that. No need for the saltiness.
Nah. Also, adding to the silliness, not Ante Juric not in the dugout because he was serving a one game ban. It was his assistant Thomas Whiteside. So just because the game wasn't odd enough, like, we had that. But shout out to my Filipino brother Robbie Feldman, who was doing the commentary and did a great job. And I what a privilege to be able to call something like that. So so that is what it was. And you know, the Mariners having they just keep Emily Husband's doing a great job. It's just like when her first season in charge of Sydney Uni, where she won the premiership with nowhere near the best squad on paper in NPL New South Wales. So she's definitely showing that she can coach. Now, on to the weekend's games. I think, let's just go in the order it's on. It is on my screen here. So firstly, Canberra United 2, Melbourne Victory 3. And yeah, just the chaos kept coming, Dale. And another two goals for Michelle Heyman, but Emily Gilnick with, I don't know what that was, but it was amazing to win it for the victory.
Yeah, this result sucked. I hate it. No, it was victory. Like, I mean, it felt like Canberra was so close to scoring for almost that whole second half. They scored an equaliser in the 70th minute to take it to 2-2, and then they just kept pushing, and then they had that opportunity just into stoppage time, and Heyman and Rojas couldn't get the ball over the line. There were like 16 players in the Melbourne Victory area, and just no one could tuck it home. And then, yeah, like 90 seconds later, Gilnick puts up a prayer and scores in the top corner. And having the tallest goalkeeper in the league doesn't mean anything if the ball goes over the top of her, unfortunately. And yeah, victory worth the 3 points. This, I feel like this was definitely a goal that, definitely a game that was like, you know, a draw would have been fair. But this game also reminded me of Wellington a few seasons ago. I think it must have been last season where they lost a bunch of games by one goal. Mm. And like every game they had an opportunity to get a point out of, and they just couldn't seal the deal. That's exactly what Canberra reminded me of at the moment. Same kind of thing, just like good experienced players up front, and then they just can't keep a clean sheet, unfortunately. Yeah. Even though they've got, you know, relatively decent experienced defenders and a good young goalkeeper, they just, yeah, unfortunately can't keep a clean sheet. But yeah, full credit to victory. It's, I was saying to you guys off mic earlier that the Gilnick goal reminds me of a goal that Amy Chapman scored about 15 years ago now, to win a game 3-2 at MacKellar Park against Melbourne Victory. He's almost exactly the same, basically put up a prayer and it just nestled in the top corner. So it is what it is. I think that's 12 games without a win for Canberra against Melbourne Victory now, which is not good for me and good for all of my friends in Melbourne. So
yeah,
well, good luck to you all.
Yes. Well, let's hope that information doesn't get to Cheryl Downes then, Dale.
No.
Bad enough for the Canberra side of you.
Yeah, we don't. We have enough collective trauma, unfortunately.
By the way, I mean, I think just a brief segue, because just thinking at Dale's point on them having a talented but very young team, Canberra. So today, this week we published the first of a two-part series written by our Stefan Moibus on Canberra United assistant coach Antoni Jagrinec. So we published the bit that deals with his time at Belconnen United, where he basically turned them into a local powerhouse. But keep an eye out. So read that, obviously, but keep an eye out for the second part of that, which will hopefully get done within the next week, where Ant actually talks about, you know, they have a young team and he's really optimistic about the future, but you know, there's going to be these teething problems when you have this many players 20 and under in a lineup at the same time. But
and further to that, as you say, like the problem is fairly clear. Like the problem is clear, it's just how you fix it. And I think that they've brought in good players. And they've retained good talent. It's just about kind of like when they played against Adelaide and we were all there, they looked like world beaters, but that was also because Adelaide looked like the bloody Washington Generals for most of that game. But when you've got the two players who are currently at the top of the Golden Boot rankings up front, there's like the problem is very obvious. It's, as I said, it's just a matter of finding the solution. And I think they've got a decent enough coaching staff that'll help them get there. Not a this year problem, but definitely in the future problem.
Yeah, and Emma, you told us pre-pod you were double screening that along with the game involving Melbourne City, which we'll get onto in a bit. But yeah, anything to add for?
Just that goal from Gilnick was deranged. Like I don't understand how she did that. I also really liked Rachel Lowe's goal.
Oh yes,
yeah, that was very nice.
Very pretty. So props to her. That's, I think, her seventh goal of the season as well. So not having a bad one, she is.
Yeah, it's it's like, because I like, there's a lesson for all the kids there, because Rachel Lowe was robbed from possession for what led to the first goal, but straight away she's, you know, there you go, kids. She back on it, didn't drop her head and scored a really lovely finish after a nice run to, you know, get in behind the defense and meet that pass. So, Michelle, another two goals for Michelle Heyman, because that's what she does. So on to the other game you were watching, Emma. Melbourne City 2, Wellington 1 at a, I suppose technically not a new venue, but a new field somewhere else in Casey Fields. And the camera is in the same suburb as the field, which is good.
Yeah.
And good, Daniela Gallic once again.
Yeah, who'd have thought?
Yeah.
Who'd have thought? No, so the ground is actually like it's City's training academy grounds there. So they don't have to play on the like Casey Demons AFL football field, which is why the camera actually looks like it's in the correct postcode again.
Mm.
But yeah, also a very unserious game.
Mm.
No one was doing much really in the first half, much of anything. Polisina opened with her making up for missing that penalty. It was Grosso who tried to put a shot on and then couldn't get enough like power through it, and it kind of rolled in front of Polisina.
Yeah.
And then she was just like, you know what? I'll do the rest. Yeah. I got this from here. And then Ekic just sending defenders left and right and all over the place. And so City were sitting pretty with a 2-0 lead. It looked like they were just going to cruise along, but Mariana Speckmeyer did not agree with that. Mm. And she scored as well, dragging them back into it. It was actually also a really good save from Lizanne Prue a bit earlier to keep Wellington at bay. But then Ekic got a red card. And so now she's gone for, she was gone for that game and she's gone for the next City game. And then the rest of it was just kind of City being like, well, we're not going to let them score again. And Wellington looking pretty threatening, in my opinion. But yeah, they couldn't find the final equalizer there. So City got away pretty lucky, as far as I'm convinced.
Yeah, also, and I'm glad the commentator Pokwa Frimpel mentioned that. The move to the second goal starts with Caitlin Torpy up against Isabel Cox. Quite the size difference there. Didn't bother Caitlin Torpy. Muscled her off the ball, beat another defender, started the move, and it ends up with a goal. So it was really good stuff. And, you know, Caitlin Torpy, who is, well, as Madge has probably lamented a lot of times, part of that Queensland to Victoria talent pipeline. But she's...
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, she's
of the doing great. Of the pipeline and of Caitlin Torpy. Yeah. Both of these things. Very good. Yes.
And yeah,
thank you, Queensland, for your service.
And yeah, Torpy also in the Australia under 23s as well. So, like, you know, she'll keep in that frame with performances like that. So on to the late game on Saturday, and what I think Madge and I were staying up for that one. Perth 0, Brisbane 0, but not for want of trying from either side, Madge.
You know, at least the other games this round had some good goals, because this was one of the most unsatisfying things I've seen in a while. Very, very frustrating. But yeah, for a nil or draw, it was definitely an entertaining nil or draw. So 11 shots for Perth to 26 for Brisbane. I don't know how we did not score. It's one of those mysteries of football. I don't have the XG there. I mean, only 8 of those shots were on target, but there were a lot of just, even sometimes when there weren't shots, there were some good crosses going in that just didn't quite meet a foot, didn't quite like it. So Brisbane, like, again, I guess it's like good signs, but I think similar to Dale, to what you were saying about Canberra, it's like Brisbane have kind of been, apart from those few games where they sort of really, really looked pretty awful, they've missed chances, they've had unlucky calls, or they've not been able to convert. And they've been like that, I think, for the last few years, just not quite being able to find that X factor to push them over in games like this. And look, and Perth had some amazing chances there, especially towards the end. I was like, oh no, this better not be one of those games where we cop a late one. And you know what? Brisbane could have won it. I mean, we got the penalty for a handball in the box. I think it was Rigby. And yeah, look, not a great penalty by Ishinori. I don't know why Mia Corbin didn't take the pen. I think she's taken some other ones, but it reeked to me, I guess, of a team maybe sort of low on that scoring confidence and sort of almost too desperate for the win. And so when it's a pen, sort of a bit nervous of us trying to side put it into goal, and Morgan Aquino sort of fairly comfortably getting across to it. But yeah, so I mean, I guess there's still good signs there for Brisbane. Perth, yeah, I mean, Perth, they still had their chances, but Brisbane did seem to have like the most of the running in the game. Also, and I don't know how often this has happened, but a ref going down with cramp as well. So I know I've seen refs go down with injury. I'm not sure if I've ever seen a ref going down with cramp before and being replaced. So I mean, that was interesting, but I don't think it was too disruptive. I think the flow of the game sort of just continued fairly much in the same vein for the rest of the game. So yeah, look, Brisbane, I think just really desperate for a win at this point, but you know, I guess you got to be happy for a point, but definitely one the way you feel like they've lost 2 points on the road there.
Yeah, it's a tough one for Michaela Ryan, young ref from Sydney. So she's obviously done the cross country thing, and then
and a bunch of Brisbane players were going down as well. But I mean, and a few Perth players. So it didn't seem like it was that hot, but yeah, I guess the travel combined with you know some, maybe some humidity and stuff, it did seem a little bit of a slog out there during the game as well.
Yeah, I thought this one. Yeah, you're right. I think I agree with everything you've said there, Madge. Nil all, but I think, especially when you look at a one-game sample size, sometimes the ball just doesn't want to go in. I think that's one of those. Because I didn't have particularly big issues with the way either team attacked, or the way they tried to construct moves. It's just sometimes it won't fall for you. So that that was the case for both teams at the same time.
Definitely towards the end, Perth had some
not-dead
chances. Yes. They absolutely missed. So but on a plus side, I think I'm continue to be really impressed by Kaya Stevenson in midfield. I think she's really building to be sort of a great young player in the league, and Sian Fryer is just continually looking fantastic on the wing. So there's good positive signs there, and hopefully the floodgates will open soon for Brisbane.
Yeah, but I think especially with like some of Sian Fryer's performances, I think one of Brisbane's opponents is going to absolutely get it before the end of the season. So
yeah, agreed. I think she's like a couple of weeks away. shades of Jamila Rankin tearing it up for a few weeks after kind of having a long run up and then just getting let go, for want of a word. Mm. On the long run. But yeah, I looked up the XG. It was only 1 and 1.8, but as you say, like Millie Farrow had that chance that was blocked basically off the line.
Oh, that's right. That Holly McQueen, thank God she wasn't actually suspended and she had her red card. Because she slid in to save that little cutback, which was looking very dangerous as well.
The point that you make about like Brisbane feeling like they're close to or really needing a win, like I'm having a look at the numbers and I'm just like, a lot of these shots just kind of stink of a team that's like can't score, and they're shooting because they don't have an idea of how to get the ball into the right spot, because most of the shots are like outside the box
or even the time when they are in the right spot. They're back to goal or something, and they just
they're shooting off the wrong foot.
They just don't have their body in the right position to have a good ping at goal. So,
that keeps Perth in a good spot. Was it third? I'm just looking at the table. Brisbane, I mean, 10th sounds bad, but 4 points off the finals with 9 games left. Still plenty of cause for optimism, I think. Now, the first game on Sunday, I think. Well, there's so much football. Like, if I think this is the one game where we paid a little bit less attention to it, but still, another great job done by Cat Smith, Western United coach. 1-0 win over Adelaide, who stay bottom. And it was who was it? Kiwa Hieda, who I think centre defender. Yeah,
it was a beautiful goal. I watched the highlights.
Yes,
and it was just a lovely taken touch and a couple of touches that were just real quality, and then just smacked it.
And I think, it's just, again, another one of those players who, like, generally at least threatens to do stuff like that. But, she sent the defender for a bottle of sake there. And it was, that's all she wrote. Thank you. I was researching the correct reference while actually during this pod. This is I do that kind of thing most weeks. But so you know, Cat Smith obviously getting a lot of praise for her work at the Wanderers, and not the most spectacular win, but it's a win and a clean sheet. They're in fifth. The defending is, I mean, pretty good. Pretty good, all things considered, considering that you've had a coaching change mid-season. So, Western United continuing to do good things in the dub. Now, onto, I think, another crazy game, another typical dub game. I was worried about this because of the ridiculous heat in Sydney. Worried about what we would see, but we turned out to see it turned out to be a great game. Sydney FC 2, Newcastle Jets 1. Firstly, Serena Bolden doing very Serena Bolden things with the opener, and it looked like another one of those games for Sydney. But then, young Maddie Caspers, who's been brilliant after coming out of nowhere, and is what a 3-year deal now. Dale, I think we established that.
Yeah, she signed till the end of 2026.
That's so Sydney FC clearly liking what they're seeing, and like pretty much a very back and forth game, and then the stoppage time winner from Zara Kruger. Oh, sorry, Matt. Sometimes the pipeline goes to Sydney, not not Victoria.
The high-speed rail hasn't been built all the way yet.
Yes, but so much to talk about from Sydney versus Newcastle. And yes, there's a big opportunity for Newcastle. They don't win away against Sydney very often, but you know, the kids have saved the day for Auntie Urich.
Yeah, I was super impressed with Newcastle in this game, to be honest. Yeah. The goal that Kruger scored right at the death definitely felt like it was like coming for about probably like 25 minutes. I feel like I wouldn't say they had the momentum, but they definitely had some running of the game in the first kind of 15 minute period of the second half, and then they went off for the drinks break. First of all, this game should not have been played.
Oh, no, not at 6 p.m. There's nothing afterwards at Leichhardt.
It was 39 degrees. They knew that there was a big southerly coming through at about 8, and they could have played this game under the lights at 8 o'clock. There was nothing else going on. Newcastle are only going back up the freeway on a bus. I know that it's a slight inconvenience, but again, this game should not have been played at this time. I think that definitely contributed to the fact that Newcastle just really fell over in the second half. Sydney the first goal that they scored was the Caspers goal was a good bit of work, but they just kept coming. And it just looked like a team who they were running downhill, if only figuratively, not physically. But yeah, the ending to this game definitely felt inevitable, unfortunately, for Newcastle fans.
Yes, it's the way it just got more and more stretched in the middle third. It just kept, the gaps kept getting bigger and bigger. And by the way, you pointed this out to me, Dale. Kirsty Fenton's pass to set up Zara Kruger.
Oh.
Like a pitching wedge from a golfer that's won several majors.
A flop shot just straight out of onto the green and just rolled straight into the cup. Lovely stuff. And then Kruger she just had to do the rest, and do the rest she did. I won't fault Isabel Nino for what happened. She got caught in two minds, and that happens, especially when you've been standing out there in the sun all day.
Yeah, and I imagine initially off Fenton's boot, it would have looked like it was going to go straight down Izzy Nino's throat, but the backspin she put on it, it just died, dropped straight in front of Zara Kruger. It was a brilliant pass. Also, I love the battle between Claudia Chico and Courtney Vine, so that was back, and I think almost a perfect defensive performance, at least in that aspect. But Chico couldn't block the cross by which Vine set up Caspers for that goal. And then also, I don't know why Sydney would appear to have beef with Lorena Bauman, but it did seem like the Sky Blues were taking it in turns to smash her repeatedly.
Shades of like Maradona in the 86 World Cup. She just got the absolute piss kicked out of her for 90 minutes. And there was that portion where they had the free kick. They had a free kick Jets had about free kick about 30 meters out from a foul on Bauman. And then the ball goes into the box and it falls to Bauman. And like the whole Sydney defense just lunges in and tackles her. It was like watching, like throwing chicken feed to the chooks, and all of the birds just fly in from all over the coop to land in it. You have to feel for her. Hopefully, she's not a member of the small shin club, shin guards club, because yeah, she definitely needs to take some of those hockey shin guards to the next match. I think they were very unfair on her.
Yeah. And if she was a member of the Small Shin Guards Club, she will not be anymore.
No. She's going to go buy just newspapers and just shove them down her socks next week.
Great entertainment, though. I mean, sorry, Lorena. But finally, after this one, a game actually played at a sensible time and a game that was moved due to the heat in the Greater Sydney area. Central Coast Mariners 1, Wanderers 2, played at 8:45 p.m. Local time, which I think, according to Andy Howe, makes it the latest local time kickoff for a dub game in history, I think. So
I have no problem with that.
Oh, yeah. And
not at all.
Ended up with a pretty fast-paced game. The Wanderers, I mean, I think I've spent a lot of years observing the Wanderers dub team. And obviously, it's generally most of the time been tough. And then they've been unlucky in certain games. And I think... are the Wanderers actually good enough now that they're starting to get a bit of luck? Because I think obviously the winning goal, which will not be a Malia Morris goal, no matter how much he claims for that, it's definitely an own goal. But even the first one could have been called offside. The Mariners certainly thought so. But you know, what a day for the Caspers family. Holly scoring as well, and then despite that, really an equaliser from Isabel Gomez. Another great goal this. From this weekend, I think the Wanderers took advantage of their bit of luck from going back in front, and I think they managed it pretty well from then on. Although, with the same thing that happened in the Sydney Newcastle game, there was a lot of space in the middle third of the field towards the end of the game. But you know, you get that with summer football. So back at the table, Wanderers up to fourth. This is that next derby, I don't know when that is off the top of my head, but the next city derby is now really tasty. And I think this is post Denise O'Sullivan, the Wanderers' best chance to win a derby. Yep. So that's the action. Also,
is the 2nd of March at Parramatta.
And
5 o'clock kickoff.
I will be there. I will not be doing Football New South Wales commentary that day. I've got to remember that because I am not stupid. I want to see what happens in the next Sydney derby.
Yeah, that'll be a cracking game, I reckon.
Oh my goodness. And yeah, that's but obviously we'll cover that more when it comes down to it. Now, a couple of spicy heat related tweets. I mean, further to what Dale said, friend of the pond Megan, before Sydney versus Newcastle, will there be more players being subbed off due to the heat than goals? Will there be more drinks breaks than players hospitalized due to heat related conditions? Stay tuned to find out. Thankfully, no and yes were the answers to those two questions, but oh god, it was
oppressive.
It was we keep getting lucky with this. I think it's reminiscent of a game I saw last season between the Wanderers and Adelaide. Like, just no, we don't need to play football in these conditions, irrespective of how good the game ended up being. And also a tweet from Greg. I love this one right at the start of that game. People finding any shade they can, including a line of spectators in the very skinny shadow left by the flood, one of the floodlight towers.
I noticed that at Unite Round, and there were two groups of two who were sitting under the under the light post. And I thought, oh, that is absolute genius. Unfortunately, you have gone to a football game in 40 degree heat. So there is, you know, you've kind of made your bed. But yeah, good on them for... There was somebody else who was out there who had a tent. Who just pitched a tent on the hill, which I thoroughly agree with.
That's brilliant. I mean, I feel like they might stop you at a marquee, bringing in a marquee, but a tent, I reckon you can get away with that. Also,
it's going to bring in pallets and just make a small building on the hill.
Yes, it's a temporary structure. No need to get council involved. I see no issues with that.
I mean, Sam wasn't allowed in with a pizza box. Sam and Sylvia weren't allowed in with a pizza box. So, I mean, the pallet is not made of cardboard. So, the theory may stand.
Also, I mean, Sam's tall enough to provide a lot of shade. So,
yeah,
if nothing else works. Also, shout out to the people who run the ice cream truck that appears at Lycan Oval during games. That like that game would have been like printing money. Well done to you.
Yeah.
So briefly, we've got to, I've got to at least try and manage time once. So upcoming dub round fixtures in the show notes, but it's just, if I could get brief thoughts from each of you, what one game or thing are you looking forward to from this upcoming weekend?
Ooh. I am looking forward to Victory v Sydney.
Yeah,
I was just going to say the same.
Sometimes the obvious choice is the best one. Sydney on the short turnaround, by the way, after playing in ridiculous heat. So.
They will have played, I believe, so they'll have a short turnaround. They played 21st. Three games in the last week as well.
17th, 21st, and then 26th. You are right. And also and also 14th.
Yes.
I can tell you what I'm not looking forward to, which is a 5 p.m. kick off on a Thursday night for City Western. Let's make it a double header.
Oh, that's right. I got to change the show.
And then expect everyone to cheer for it.
Yep.
Yeah, like it's amazing.
I'm going to be sitting in my office. Yeah. Like in one of the jobs I work, I'm going to be in the office.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
If I'm good enough to be back at work, I'm going to start later so I can watch that from the Manly Warringah FA office.
If I were Melbourne City, I would be offering free entry to anybody that has an Oz Open ticket for that game.
That would be clever.
That's the Thursday, I think, is the first men's semi-final. Second women's semi-final, I think. So, that would be the move if it were me. But you know, they don't have to do that because they're owned by Petrostate. So, that would be my move if it were me. If you take your Australian Open ticket, you get in for both of the double headers. And then Friday, they don't need to. Sydney of the Cove have already sold out. The Cove have already sold out both away days. So
that's right. The advice is to Sydney fans to buy tickets in the bay above them. I saw that on Twitter today. So
and bring a helmet.
yes. That is a fixture best watched from the safety of the press box.
I will be definitely maneuvering to. That'll be good. No, it should be good. I'm looking forward to the City Western game should be interesting just because they're both on a bit of a tear and that game's going to be played on a carpet. So it'll suit both of them. And also the F3 Derby on Sunday at 5 o'clock at Cheryl Salisbury Field, if my understanding is correct. Just having a quick look.
Maitland?
Maitland. Well, that's what the website says.
Maitland Sports Ground. Interesting. Maitland, best known for not much.
Best known for being close to Newcastle.
Yeah, it has a train station. There's a lot of coal out there. It's not in the kind of Hunter Wine area from memory, but yeah.
It's no. Unfortunately, the cheese brand.
Maybe it's cheese.
Could be. Good. I'm sure coal and dairy go well together. I don't know. Maitland to me is coal country, but that'll be interesting as well. Hopefully, those two teams put on a show.
Yeah. Madge, any thoughts about the upcoming weekend?
Pretty much those ones are the ones that stand out. Yeah, Victory, Sydney, the F3 Derby as well. I think should be an interesting one. So, I think they're the pick of the bunch.
Yeah, and as someone who likes a bit of spice, if the women's F3 Derby could match kind of what we've seen in the men's F3 Derby over the years, that would be lovely and a great way to round off the weekend. Also, thanks Emma for reminding me that City versus Western is on Thursday. I need to update my show notes, and the A-Leagues need to update their website. Anyway.
Standard operating procedure.
Yeah. So we might just mix up the order of things. Just a bit of dub housekeeping. Unfortunately, Millie Clegg's time at the Wanderers has ended prematurely due to injuries. One of her Instagram posts basically saying it's two injuries, and that's it, which is very sad for a really promising young player. My understanding is that the Wanderers have not actually acknowledged this on their socials, which is incredibly disappointing, but anyway. This tweet from friend to be on 90, Angela Christian Wilkes. Look, at this Look, if at this point in the season you're being marked by Sasha Grove and a surprise when she kicks your legs out from under you on the way through, that's on you. Yes, it is. Correct. And look, we don't want to get into January 26 discussion, but this is, I've been saving this tweet for a couple of weeks. Basically, someone saying we should just call January 26 Steph Catley Day because that was when she was born.
That's, I have been doing this for years.
Yes.
Personally.
Ahead of the curve. Love it. Love it.
Since like also, 2016.
Also, I didn't join these two together until I saw this tweet, but Steph Catley born in 1994, which was also the year January 26 became a public holiday, which is
exactly
just perfect.
Yeah.
So
it's literally Steph Catley Day.
That's what it is. Get so that's our terminology. It. Steph Catley Day, number two sports ground in Newcastle, is now Cheryl Salisbury Field to us, and yeah, we'll name other things after footballers as we see fit. And you know, the usual schoolboy error segment. I almost went a pod without putting something in here. The APL have put a ladder out on Instagram. Yeah, it's got some fairly basic mathematical errors in it. And actually, it was quite amusing to see Casey Dumont in the comments saying, yeah, that we've actually got 18 points, not 17. Anyway, what else do we have? Something a bit nicer. I just like that Wellington Phoenix are of the same mind to me when it comes to Mackenzie Barry using Mackenzie Barry does Mackenzie Barry things in a tweet. Big win for the admin there. And kind of a bit more wholesome stuff. Sydney posting a Maddie Casper's instant reaction after scoring a first dub goal. Like, that's a really nice photo. So yeah, it's really like that. A bit of positive stuff there for you. Now, bit of a kind of heavier discussion. There were two articles in the past week about just the ridiculous WOSO schedule. Basically, for the world's best players, one from the ever brilliant Sophie Lawson by ESPN, and one from the equally brilliant Arda Hegerberg, who can speak from personal experience, writing for The Guardian. I think we've kind of broached this topic in the past, especially as it relates to the ongoing ACL discussion, which we're sick of. But from those articles, it's, I don't know what you three think. A lot of the same things for me, but, you know, just the need for action and for someone to put player welfare first for once, please.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of overlapping Venn diagram of player welfare and the need to for clubs to make money. Unfortunately, those clubs are going to be making money by drawing gate fees and sponsors, and those sponsors want to be seen at more games. And now that we've got the change in the Champions League as well, there's going to be a different set of games and the Conti Cup. And I think that, like, for me, I know that there are so few teams in the top tier, especially in England, but in most of these leagues, it's usually only 10 or 12 teams. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the men's leagues, you have, 18 or 20 or 24. I think that they're kind of like, the women's game is kind of in a sweet spot now of where they need to be in terms of play. I think now they're in a sweet spot. There needs to be more players within the squad to fill the squad rotation. Mm. But I think the problem is that there's going to be, these games are going to become more frequent. The season is already so compacted. They're playing like Sunday, Thursday. I think that, yeah, there just needs to be more, as you say, Eric, there needs to be more consultation with players in terms of how many games they're willing to play, or they just need to expand squad sizes and play more players per season, because there's no way that the players can be playing on the pitches. Even if the players were playing on, you know, Wembley-esque pitches every week, there's no way that they can be playing 45, 50 games a season for the remuneration that they're being given, for the quality of, treatment and facilities that they play in and train in. And then we wonder, oh, why are there so many injuries? Like, that's, it's rudimentary mathematics. I think we all understand that. There needs to be a better discussion around that from mine.
Emma or Madge, I mean, is there anything else to...
I think, yeah, and then you throw in, like, an international football calendar there as well.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about, particularly, I think, in UEFA with the Nations League and the amount of competitive yes, international right. games and international windows that they have. Maybe in that respect, I mean, it's that hard balance. I mean, so much of the women's football legacy has been built on strong international competition. We love to see the club football come up, but we are starting to see that tension between club and international football as well when it comes to scheduling. And of course, you know, the was it ECB, the European clubs or whatever they're called, before the World Cup, you know, raising concerns about scheduling, but of course from their particular self-interested view as well. So I think we're going to see more of those sorts of conversations as well, which, yeah, it's something we'll need to give. And I guess it's like what's going to be that that sweet spot, yeah, ongoing. And yeah, and again, squad size as well. I mean, for the World Cup, why did they not FIFA
allow?
Why was
it now 26 yes. like there was for the men's?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the men's Asian Cup going on right now.
Yep. I mean, Olympics, it's not great, but I somewhat understand it. I mean, that's a huge tournament and they've got to, you know, they're keeping caps on numbers of teams and beds and things in Olympic villages. So I can understand there's lots and lots of politics around.
Yeah, I did read that article today.
Oh, I didn't realize there was an article about it, yeah. But yeah, so there's always politics with these things, but given that it's, you know, still a similarly sized number of games that people are playing in a short period of time, it's, yeah, it's not great only having that many players available in a squad. But yeah, I guess the heart part of me sort of like goes, I don't want international football to be the one to fall off the cliff, because I love it. I love it. Mm. It's the thing that kind of, yeah, warms the cockles of the heart and is, can really be the pinnacle, especially as I've said before, someone who doesn't really feel that deeply for any of the big club teams in the big leagues around the world. International football is my big love. So yeah, I want fit and amazing players playing at these tournaments and playing in these big games. So let's find better ways to reduce the load throughout the season. Like, do we really need all of these little cups?
No more Mickey Mouse
Not very respectful of Arnold Clark, if ever I've heard of it, whoever that man is.
No more.
We already
Mickey
know
Mouse
that she
cups.
Does believe, so get that off.
She believes? She believes? Oh, I haven't heard that name in years. Oh,
it's a good way to live your life.
Oh, I would love to continue doing so. I don't think I will. Like the gold cup or whatever as well. Like what's going on? Stop. Yeah. No more tournament announcements until we can sort out what we've got going on right now, please. Yeah. But the only other like thing I have to say is that going off of what both of you have already said and about how something's got to give, I just don't want it to be the players. Because they're already given, a lot of them are already given out. We've already had, like, we've got, another ACL even in our league. Like, it just is impossible to do everything at once. And it's like, you know, people want to complain that the women's game makes no money. Then why are they doing this if it's not making them any money? There's so many levels to it. But
and
yes.
It's why as fans as well, it's like when for friendlies we put out a squad that isn't a full strength squad, just appreciate why that is.
And then people do their nana about it as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, our players need rest, and I think every time that, yeah, from a national team perspective, they've tried to do that, yeah, they get absolutely pillared for not putting out a full strength squad. So I think it's important for clubs and national team setups to do their part.
The other thing for me is that if every single game is like a tournament or a cup or like a qualification, if every single game means everything, do they actually mean anything at all? Like,
it's gotten very, very
deep. We are through the looking glass.
Literally, and I don't want to go through no more tournaments.
It's that Mitchell
I don't
and
want
Webb
to go through this.
clip about football.
Yeah.
Go look it up. Mitchell and Webb, football.
Some men will play some other men.
Yeah.
In another game of football,
the Giants
that will happen.
Take on the Titans of. Anyway.
Very good reference.
Put it in the pod notes. We'll put it in the pod.
I like that.
Oh, I was on mute. Haven't done that for a while. Yes.
Good one.
I'll try and find that. You're testing my Mitchell and Webb knowledge, but I'll do my best. Just the one thing I wanted to add is, I think to some extent, and UEFA Women's Nations League is the first thing I think of when it comes to trying to copy what happens in the men's game. But as Dale said, with smaller player pools, that means you can't directly copy what they do in the men's game because, as we've said, there's just not the players to support such a schedule. And also in the men's game, they're going to have a problem in a few years, I think, because they adding more games and it's already ridiculous. And
they're having a 48 team World Cup. So,
and
that's too many teams.
One in five
teams will be qualified. One in four FIFA teams will be qualifying for the World Cup.
That's
if we all qualify for the World Cup, do any of us qualify for the World Cup?
No.
No. Absolutely. What's the point?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But, and of course, they are treating of elite men's footballers as commodities, as money-making entities has been going on for ages. There's going to be a big issue in elite men's football with just injuries. But, their deeper player pool might cover that for a while, but something bad's going to happen in the league.
There was a German guy that wrote about this in about 1899. And he wrote three big, thick books about it. Anyway.
Let's
move on.
I don't have the reading level to give that the respect it deserves. Yeah. But anyway. Speaking of kind of in the same vein as copying what you do with the men's, something that briefly amused me, DAZN lifting the paywall on women's football. I mean, everyone's got to chase the bag, but I think their way to try and monetize UEFA Women's Champions League rights hasn't quite worked the way it wanted. And of course,
it's just like simple, like they should have just offered a package for women's football. Yeah. I think the issue was that they offered packages where you got everything that they do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like there's women's football and then there's stuff that I don't want to generalize too much. But they carry a lot of stuff that women's football fans aren't going to be particularly interested
yes,
in.
Yes, I'm sure there's some kind of boxing and UEFA Women's Champions League crossover in fans.
And they would have been in heaven.
Yeah. And
those fans were in heaven.
Yeah. Both of them were very happy. But as you say, like they don't need to make money from the Women's Champions League. They make all of their money in pay-per-view from the boxing. And the mixed master. I think they have the rights to one championship in Southeast Asia. So, they make the money out of that. They can, it's not necessarily like this is a corporate, a corporate good, but they don't need to be saying, oh, yeah, give us $49 for 12 months of 8 games of football. Like, come on. But yeah, they're also, DAZN is huge in Japan. So, they make plenty of money over there. They don't need my $49.
Said.
Well, that and they're not getting $49.
Yeah, I think they may have gotten $49 in total for these games.
Especially, not that I'm always a big fan of somewhat of a highlight culture that's developed with fans, and especially with lots of things being available on YouTube in neat 5 to 7 minute packages. But I think from memory, those were still available. And if it's that or $49, I'm busy. These highlight packages will do very nicely.
And I think early on, it sounded like they were going to be it was going to have Champions League. It was maybe going to have Bundesliga, and maybe they do have Bundesliga in certain territories, but not here.
Yes.
There's always that sort of issue. Well, yeah, if they've got a package, then for sure. And I like the idea of monetizing the women's game. Yeah. It's like too often people use the fact that it doesn't make money as an excuse. Mm. This is a great product. It is a product that people should pay money for. But, you've got to package and sell it attractively as well.
Yeah, I agree.
The lesson there from Madge, we want to give you our money just
give don't us, be don't, I'm not giving you the stupid right, amounts of money.
Yes. What is this? Me spending money on customized WOSO jerseys? No. It's
no.
That people are most people are not that silly. Now, just writing off the news. Yes. So back to kind of related to everything we've been discussing, another ACL injury. So yes, our thoughts with Mariners captain Taron King. So that's the seventh injury, ACL injury this dub season. But anyway, hope she's back better than ever. Hopefully, of course, Taron doesn't rush that rehab because it's not necessary. And then, just to acknowledge national teams, there was a link in the show notes for those who are interested in the latest Junior Matildas training camp. It's going on at the Australian Institute of Sport this week, actually. And of course, good news for my employer with Manly United Sienna Dale earning another selection. And also, if you're of a mind to remember names for the future, remember the name Michaela Duong. I've seen her play futsal. I've seen her play NPL. And I think she is going to be great when the time is right in the dub. Incredible technique and can already really run a midfield and almost impossible to get the ball off. So will not surprise you to learn she's another futsal player. What am I up to? I shouldn't have done this out of order. My bad. But, just briefly, Emma, as an Arsenal fan, you'd be happy with Arsenal 2, Everton 1.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dale. Yes.
To an extent. Don't know why we had to concede that goal, but you know, it happens to the best of them. But yeah, no, otherwise very good. Nice to see Ford back on the scoring sheet as well. So
I have nothing to add.
Yeah, best. It's
I'm a husk.
It's like that for Everton fans.
At least we don't have a 10-point deduction in this league. So
yes, because you can't afford it in this league.
No, well, because we would have 1 point.
I mean, the men's team's probably going to be fine, but what can I say, Dale? Thank
the
God,
team
there's
would be
Bristol City.
If they were getting a 10-point deduction at this point.
Yeah. Also,
I just say, look at all these glorious yellow cards.
Oh yes, know, Katrina Gorry, two from two yellow cards. I mean, she's really making an impact in the literal sense.
Courtney Nevin got one as well.
Oh, yeah, that's very Courtney Nevin.
Tegan Micah
and
got one
Tegan
as well.
Micah.
Wow. Tegan Micah, I think she was lucky not to get a second one as well. From what I saw of it.
Yeah, it's...
I will also note that we have our first suspension for yellow cards of the season coming up this week. Shay Holman is suspended for the next round.
Yeah.
Because of five red cards and that five yellow cards.
Five, yes,
and that,
that's right.
Cards. That rule has only just changed this season. So congratulations to her for being the first player.
That's a Northern Beaches football milestone. Our very own Shay Holman.
Congratulations.
The first player to reach the five to be suspended for reaching the five yellow card.
I believe
this season.
The first...
I hope someone at Brisbane is counting.
Yeah.
Yes.
I believe that Nikki Stanton was the first player to be suspended for yellow card accumulation in a shortened season for four, but I cannot be sure of that.
Yeah.
God, what a throwback.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that name in relation to this league in a hot minute.
For various reasons.
Moving on.
Not a surprising name to be linked with
a
suspension for accumulation of yellow cards. Either.
Love to tackle.
Sometimes she even got the ball.
Yes.
Also, enough times for her nickname to be Goody, which was get used to it.
That's very funny.
Sorry for cutting you off. Just that's always one of my favorite things to remember about her. That and she owns a dog called Burger.
Runner. I didn't expect this to divulge into Nikki Stanton facts, but here we are. Thank you.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Dale now has a rival for obscure info. I love it.
Yes, I like that.
I love obscure info. Let's do this.
Yeah. Also in the WSL, my takeaways, Rachel Daly and Elizabeth Turlin continuing to carry their teams and making sure they are safe from relegation as they are scoring all the goals for Aston Villa and Brighton, respectively. A Lauren James hat-trick against her old club. What else was there? A Bunny Shaw perfect hat trick, a third hat trick in four games, I think I heard on the commentary. And she sealed it with a left footed back heel. Yeah.
Deeply unserious league.
Yes. Yeah. Almost as unserious as the dub. Yep.
They wish. They wish they could hit our level of
unserious. There are no rivals.
Good. Yeah. Also, I remember chat Emma and I had a couple of weeks ago about Jenna Clark being a giant defender and how comforting that is. I imagine Bunny Shaw would be playing against Liverpool thinking, what giant defender?
Like looking over the heads of everyone being like, where is she?
I was told there was a giant Scottish defender, but I only see an average size Scottish defender. Is she suspended? And yes, of course, WSL Heritage, West Ham looking like they'd earn a point and then conceding a late goal to lose points. Thoughts and prayers with Angela Christian Wilkes, but West Ham never change. And it will feel like they do this 50 times a year, but they will still somehow not get relegated. So they'll be back again to throw away more points next season. Yes, I think, Dale, you pointed out pre-pod, Claire Hunt's PSG won 8-1 against Bordeaux. So, ouch to Bordeaux. Also the
former
rare
employers of Bunny Shaw.
Yes. And, the rare Ellie Carpenter non-start, she came off the bench. And I think that would be the last time she begins a game as a substitute for a while, because Leon conceded while she was off the field, but they won anyway. What else is there? Also, speaking of beatdowns, Jacinta Galabarashi's Sporting beat Alba Gaia 8-0 in the Portuguese Cup, so who knows what league Alba Gaia played in. And Hayley Rasta on the wrong side of one in the Supercopa semifinals in Spain, getting tonked. Real Madrid getting tonked 4-0 by Barcelona. So. So obviously got full Aussies Abroad details in the show notes, because I'm sick and not working, so I actually had time to do them for once. Now, I think that's it. On to Queens, Kings, and Emperors of the Week. We good to go for that? Mm-hmm. And if we are, then who wants to go first?
Em can go first.
I was going to say, I can start this off nice and silly. My Queen of the Week is technically... I don't know, would it count as then a Vempera? Because it's not actually.
Yes, it is. Yep, I like it. It's a Vempera. Yep, you're right.
Vempera of the Week is actually the wind that featured at the the West Ham Tottenham game, particularly when poor Christy Mewis was trying to take a corner kick. Because it just wasn't, the wind was not having it. And it was very funny to watch. Like the corner flags getting involved, the ball is not staying on the line. But you know, she powered through. She ended up picking up an assist in the game in her debut. So good for Chrissy Mewis. But yeah, the wind. That's my pick.
It's a very, very good pick. I'll embed that in the show notes. It's a hilarious clip. A real welcome to the WSL, as if having to play home games at Chigwell Construction Stadium and being introduced to whatever the Conti Cup is, as if that wasn't enough, she's had to deal. I mean, I think you told us she's from Massachusetts, so she's
Boston. Yeah.
No stranger, I think, to extreme conditions in the winter. But even so,
I think that was a bit much. It was a bit excessive.
It was a bit excessive, but hey, she's doing it for love.
I mean, they did have. This week the US had like the most insane weather for, like, they had games getting NFL playoff games getting canceled.
Oh, because it was so cold. Because
it was
so snowy.
Buffalo had volunteer people. Well, Buffalo had fans coming and getting $20 an hour to shovel the field, and then the game got canceled because the pitch was frozen.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought
if you need to shovel the field, it might already be frozen.
Yeah, it could be a problem. But yeah, it's a whole different kettle of fish in London.
Yep. But she's doing it for love. That's the main thing.
After you, Madge.
Yeah.
Look, I'm just going to give a shout out to Emily Gilnick with that screamer of a goal to win the game for victory. And especially just after, you know, she's had so many injury troubles to come back and just, you know, just pop that nice photo over and grab the points for her team. That's just a nice little return for Emily. I've actually just had another one come to my head. All the talk of Mewis's, Sam Mewis.
Oh yes, yes.
Announced her retirement from, I think it was just international football, football in general.
Football in general.
In general, yeah, yeah, the general. Past week. So, yeah, that's sad. Again, injury strikes too much and too hard to one of the best players, you know, we've seen running around in recent years. So that's a bit of a sad note. But yeah, all the best to Sam in her future endeavours.
Yeah, all the best to Sam Mewis, I think. Yeah, that so that links neatly but not nicely to what we were discussing earlier. Just yeah, of course, as a longtime US national team player, Sam would have been getting quite the physical toll with Yeshiba League cups and whatnot. So yeah, it's a shame, but you know, players have to make the best decisions for themselves. Dale, you'd be next.
That would be correct. My coin of the week is Sarah Kruger. She of a tender 17 years with the winner on the weekend against the Newcastle Jets for Sydney. And boy, howdy, didn't she love it. And thank God that somebody won that game, because a draw would have just been a cruel way to finish that match. But yeah, Sarah Kruger for me.
Yeah, and it's a massive leap to move interstate for that length of time as a high school age person. So it's great to see it's working out. And yeah, Auntie, she's got a lot of game time. Auntie Yurich clearly believes mm-hmm. in her. I mean, so does that mean Sydney's just the intermediate stop and then she signs for one of the Victorian teams? I don't know. But anyway.
Well, I mean, we can only hope.
Yes, Some things may be inevitable in that one. Anyway, yeah, my queen of the week, pretty predictable. Yeah, it's Ashley Irwin, just doing what is highly entertaining for basically everyone except the person who has to do it, being an outfielder that has to go in goals. But when her team needed her, she stepped up, and yeah, it's now has a across NPL New South Wales and the Dub has a 100% winning record as a goalkeeper, and not many people can say that. Well done to you, Ashley Irwin. And I was just thinking, because there's a photo put in the show notes of the keeper jersey they had a short notice for her. I mean, if Mariners were offering customization for jerseys, I would spend stupid amounts of money on one of them green jerseys with Irwin 67 on the back, because that would be proper way to pay homage to a really historic moment in the Dub. Anyway, I think that's it. So, yep, on behalf of Emma Burke, Magella Card, and Dell Roots, this is Eric Cipriano signing off, wishing you all the best, plenty of good vibes, great coffee, sick tattoos, Razzlers, and yes, if you are an outfielder that has to go in goal for your team at some point this year, Godspeed, and may you do the best. See you next week.